With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City Newsday. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us this morning for your agriculture news. Today is Friday, September 22nd. Coming up in today's show, farmers, business owners, and others on Medicare may find a bigger bill in the mail than they expected. We have more on that later on in the show, but we start off this morning with Ryan German.
California Department of Food and Agriculture recently announced the lowest projection in 9 years of initial expectations for navel orange production. The forecast is estimating 70 million cartons of production based on the results of the Navel Orange Objective Measurement Survey. The survey was conducted from July 8th to September 1st and included conventional, organic, and specialty varieties. 576 orange groves were selected to participate, and of that total, 540 were used for data collection. The survey showed 115,000 bearing acres with an average of 135 trees per acre. The survey also indicated a fruit set per tree of 273, down from 384 last season and below the 5-year average of 348. The average September 1st diameter was 2.34 inches, an increase from last season's 2.21 and above the 5-year average of 2.24 inches. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
And we go to Taylor Hillman now.
The organic trend continues to push marketing and in turn production. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Agricultural Statistics Service released the results of the 2016 Certified Organic Survey, and it shows an increase of a whopping 23%. 2016 totaled $7.6 billion in certified organic products. That's up over $1 billion from 2015's total of $6.2 billion. The report also showed the number of certified organic farms in the country increased 11%, and the number of certified acres increased 15%. California led all states in certified organic sales with $2.9 billion. That accounts for 38% of the U.S. total. It also had the largest share of certified organic farms and acres. The top three states, California, Wisconsin, and New York, totaled over 5,000 acres of the U.S. total of 14,000. Crops accounted for 56% of the sales, and livestock, poultry, and their products accounted for 44%. The top commodities in 2016 were milk, up 18% from 2015, eggs up 11%, broiler chickens up 78%, apples up 8%, lettuce up 6%. Other top organic crops were strawberries, grapes, tomatoes, corn, potatoes, hay, spinach, and mushrooms. To see any of this data, you can head to our website, agnetwest.com. I'm Taylor Hillman for AgNet West Radio Network.
A report by CoBank shows U.S. milk production growth is outpacing processing capacity growth, leaving dairy processors struggling to keep pace. Every year, U.S. dairy farmers produce 3 billion more pounds of milk than the year before. CoBank says that those increases challenge processors, who need an estimated 27 billion pounds more of U.S. milk processing capacity over the next 10 years if current trends persist. The report says that numerous new plants and plant expansion projects are underway or recently completed, but available capacity remains at a challenge at times, especially in the Northeast and Mideast areas, and has strained the ability of dairy cooperatives to fill the role of market balancers. Since these co-ops largely bear the brunt of the near-term oversupply of milk, they are increasingly looking for ways to discourage producers from expanding production. California is the top dairy-producing state in the nation. What are some of the things a livestock or poultry producer should consider when putting an animal disease preparation and response plan in writing? Rod Bain reports.
A livestock or poultry producer should have a written plan in place detailing both prevention of and response to an animal disease outbreak. A great part, according to University of Missouri Extension economist Ray Massey, to have financial resources available to stay in business if such an event were to occur.
The banker, you share it so that he knows what the expenses are likely to be and how long you're likely to be needing a line of credit. But if you already had that note communicated with your banker already, there's much more likely that you'll be able to get through this.
Yet what should the elements of such a plan be, both from the perspectives of biosecurity and economics? Massey says there are three steps to consider. First is hazard assessment, which in turn then produces management strategies.
Assuming that you've analyzed the hazards, you've got to recognize that you don't want to get hit with a disease outbreak. The plan frequently will involve prevention. So just how can I keep it from occurring? How can I exclude animals that might have the disease? How can I keep my employees from bringing in the disease? If it comes into one location, how can I keep it from moving to another location?
In terms of the cost associated with an animal disease outbreak prevention and response plan, Massey says those can vary. On the prevention side, it could be inexpensive signage or cost involving shower facilities for equipment and personnel. An example in the response arena might be...
If, in fact, you have a disease outbreak, making sure that you have access to the equipment and the product that you will need to dispose of dead animals in a legal manner...
That could mean advanced communication with equipment dealers, sharing the plan with them, and coordinating finances, access, and other means to obtain needed equipment to deal with an outbreak. Massey says this goes a long way for producers in lining up needed resources in response to an outbreak, and in addition, have some built-in flexibility in dealing with such a situation.
Recognizing that in a difficult situation like this, all the rules change. The things you normally would have access to, you may not have access to. And so you have to build in that flexibility to say, I think I can access it from a different location, or I have the finances from the banker to give me the flexibility to do something differently.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. I'm your host, Sabrina Hill. This week's Western View is coming up after the break. We will be back in just a moment.
The Citrus Research Board invites the citrus industry to attend this year's California Citrus Conference on Wednesday, October 11th in Visalia. Join the CRB at 7:30 for registration and a free breakfast. Sessions kick off at 9 with a focus on ACP control and HLB early detection technologies. California Ag Secretary Karen Ross will address attendees, followed by a free barbecue lunch. Afternoon sessions include post-harvest technologies, biocontrol, and the very latest in citrus breeding and varieties. Pre-register for this free conference online at citrusresearch.org.
Set sail for Madison, Wisconsin and discover new dairy worlds October 3rd through the 7th at the 2017 World Dairy Expo. For 5 days, the global dairy industry meets at the Align Energy Center to view the finest dairy cattle and dairy trade shows in North America. Virtual farm tours, expo seminars, youth contests, and social activities make Expo an ideal location for learning and networking. Visit worlddairyexpo.com to plan your trip today.
Ahoy there!
Hi?
I see this be the spot for treasure.
Treasure?
Is that not a large X in your field?
Well, it is, but that's an alfalfa stand. And that X doesn't stand for the treasure you think. It stands for Harv Extra.
Harv, come again?
Harv Extra. It's the greatest innovation in alfalfa, giving me greater flexibility in my stand. It's technologically advanced to provide a wider cutting window, so now I can maintain a normal harvest schedule and achieve higher quality. Or I can delay harvest for up to 7 days for higher yield potential without sacrificing quality.
Aye, be that when compared to conventional alfalfa at the same stage of maturity?
You bet. And Harv Extra alfalfa comes stacked with Roundup Ready technology.
For unsurpassed weed control, I wager.
Sure is.
This has been great, matey. But can you point me to the nearest sea?
Oh, sure. Hang a right at the Taylor Farm and head west for 1,500 miles. Can't miss it.
We didn't invent alfalfa. We just reinvented it. See the difference of Harv Extra alfalfa at harvextra.com.
It's time to rethink what you know about clean American propane and what it can do for your operation. Want efficient, reliable power independent of the grid? Propane can do that. Power for EPA-compliant engines without all the extra fluids and filters. Propane can do that. Eliminate fuel theft. Lower hourly fuel costs. Reduce downtime. Propane can do all of that. Discover all the things propane can do on your farm at propanecandothat.com.
Healthy soil can help protect your farm from drought, improve production, and protect soil and water resources. Plus, healthy soil can lower input costs, and that can lead to a healthier bottom line for your business. Contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today.
It's finally fall. This year, summer held on to the last possible second, giving us the treat of one of the hottest summers ever. Here in the Fresno, California area, we set a record for the most days above 105. Yeah, it's a distinction we could have done without, but we didn't have any say in the matter. And on the positive side, it did make for some really good peaches and nectarines. But time marches on, and with the fall of the temperature, a young man's fancy turns to football, and a farmer turns to the weather. California summers are wonderfully predictable. They're one hot day after another, for the most part, with dry weather pretty much guaranteed through September. But what might happen after that has us all in suspense. Are we getting rain this year? A nice wet winter? Or is that drought going to come back? Important questions, to be sure. But to answer them, we have to turn to a less than perfect science. Weather forecasting has always seemed more an art than a science. Professional meteorologists assure us they have the tools and the knowledge to prognosticate wisely. But this year, even the scientists agree they don't know what's going to happen. There's no El Nino or La Nina, so the winter can go either way. They think it'll be warmer or cooler than average. Well, imagine that. I'll go out on a limb with them and say it'd either be wetter or drier than average this winter. Well, that's what happens when our winter is not affected by El Nino or La Nina. The impact these forces have on wind, air pressure, and rain creates a predictable and cascading effect around the entire globe. It affects us here by moving the jet streams that guide storms toward the United States. That makes prognosticating the weather much easier. But without El Nino, we're left with the old farmer's almanac and grandpa's bad knees to tell us what's going to happen. Or maybe we could flip a coin. Well, the almanac says we're in for a warmer than usual winter, but with a normal amount of moisture, except in Texas, which is going to be wet. Well, that sounds about right. That's what my arthritic old bones are saying. We're in for a normal, warm, but wet winter. I'm Len Wilcox, and that's the Western View, brought to you by Citrus Industry Magazine. Visit us on the web at www.citrusindustry.net.
Well, in today's livestock news, Ethan Lane with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and Public Lands Council discusses this week's news that Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke has proposed that several national monuments be reduced in size.
The Secretary of Interior had finished his report on those monuments that had been ordered by President Trump through executive order back at the beginning of the summer. We've now, in the past few days, seen a leaked copy of that get out to the press, in particular the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal. Obviously, anybody who's been following the news knows that leaks are something that have kind of dominated the headlines in this current administration. This certainly falls into that same category. It sounds like it was a maybe disgruntled career employee at one of the agencies at Interior that passed this off. Nevertheless, what we're left with is sort of a little bit of an inside look at what we might expect from the president. We certainly have a better look at what the secretary recommended to him as far as dealing with these monuments that have been created over the past few decades. And, you know, what we've seen fits with what we've communicated to the administration and in our comments on this review process, and certainly seems to have included a reflection of some of our priorities for getting these monuments brought back into line. And I want to be careful because, you know, this is a leaked document we're talking about. So, you know, it's not something they've put out publicly. And until they do, this is all sort of still in the realm of speculation. But it certainly would appear that they want to reduce that Bears Ears monument that was 1.35 million acres. They want to take as much of as a million acres out of that monument, which is right in line with some of the advice we have provided, as well as our affiliate in Utah and ranchers throughout the West. You know, you don't need to take that extra million acre buffer around a monument to protect it. And when you do that, you really disadvantage those local communities that need that agricultural engine to drive their economy. So we see that they might take some action there. They might take some action up at Cascade Siskiyou in Oregon. That's a smaller designation, but for the five or so permittees that lost their allotments because of that expansion, I guarantee you it's every bit as big as the monument in Utah or anywhere else. So we're hopeful. It looks like they're going to take some action there. And maybe more importantly, it sounds like we're going to see some language across the board on these monuments that really works to preserve grazing. We've heard for decades now that these monuments aren't going to impact grazing. And what we've seen is the result is exactly the opposite. Grazing is reduced everywhere these monuments go into play. So hearing from the administration that they plan to try to take some action to ensure that grazing is protected is music to our ears and certainly something we've been advocating for.
Again, Ethan Lane with the NCBA and Public Lands Council, and he encourages producers to get engaged in discussions to let others know why it's important to you. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West. AgriView with Everett Griner is next.
How many times have I mentioned what agriculture does for the nation's economy? Now, you probably think in terms of cotton, corn, wheat, and soybeans. Those are our major crops. But what else? Well, how about livestock? All livestock now, not just cows, hogs, and chickens. Well, collectively, here's a few numbers that may surprise you. Every year, $375 billion in gross domestic product. 2 million jobs in the nation's economy. Livestock production generates $21 billion in income taxes, adds over $7 billion in property taxes. It contributes $80 billion in household income. Add all that up and, well, my handheld calculator won't go near that high. Bottom line is, animal agriculture provides significant support to the nation's economy. Think about that the next time you bite into that hunk of rib roast. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Griner, AgNet West.
September is Food Safety Education Month. How much do you know about the safest way to prepare the food you eat? Keep listening as Stephanie Ho talks with experts and consumers alike to test their knowledge of food safety in this edition of Agriculture USA.
Everyone who was around in the 80s should be able to remember this mainstream hit. The original song by Michael Jackson was such a huge sensation, it sparked well-known parodies. So eat it. Don't you tell me you're full, just eat it. Weird Al's cover version is indeed humorous, but it's the preface to a much more serious subject, the issue of food safety.
Food poisoning is actually a serious public health threat.
Chris Bernstein with USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service wants more people to be aware of the facts.
CDC estimates that millions of people get a foodborne illness each year, and that results in 128,000 hospitalizations and unfortunately 3,000 deaths annually.
I'm Stephanie Ho, and in this week's Agriculture USA, we'll look at some food safety basics so you can avoid foodborne illnesses, but still, you guessed it. So eat it. I don't care if you're full. USDA parked a food safety information truck at its weekly farmers market in honor of Food Safety Education Month.
We happened to say that we were out at the market, so
just pure curiosity.
That was Terry, who was visiting the truck with his friend Arthur. Shayna brought her 2.5-year-old son.
I like to have my son teach him about washing his hands and not touching raw food, and raw eggs are not good to, you know, eat.
What's one top issue?
We get tens of thousands of questions from consumers, and I would say one of the top questions we get is about leaving food out. Oftentimes people will make something, they get caught up at night, kids have to get to bed, they have to do all the other things, and they wake up in the morning and, oh look, dinner is still on the stove.
Okay, I'm gonna ask you guys the food safety quiz. So when you're finished with dinner, do you put your leftovers away right away?
I usually put my leftovers away right away, yes.
Yeah, I'd guess so too.
Yes, I do.
Yes, in the refrigerator.
Okay, and do you use a meat thermometer?
Maybe 50 to 75% of the time.
I never cook meat.
I really don't cook a lot of meat, so I know you have a thermometer now.
I know I should. Usually, yeah, you should have a thermometer. It should show 160 degrees if you're cooking meat thoroughly.
According to USDA guidelines for safe minimum cooking temperatures, 160 degrees is okay for ground beef or pork.
So you should really use a food thermometer to make sure you cook all of these items to a safe internal temperature. Chicken, for example, you should cook that to 165.
Okay, and do you wash raw chicken before you cook it?
No.
When you're cooking raw chicken, do you wash it ahead of time or do you just go ahead and cook it?
I wash it ahead of time.
Yeah, same.
Beep. Wrong.
Oh, no. Is there any like solution or some sort of like stuff you could spray on the chicken to do something in place of washing it?
So washing it, instead of actually removing bacteria, because of the way bacteria attaches to meat, what you're doing is you're spreading it around your kitchen. And so to avoid that, we don't recommend washing chicken. Cooking is the safest way to get rid of bacteria.
Well, there's a lesson to learn.
Yeah, so now you can do skip a step and it's safer, so that's good.
Here at the Food Safety and Inspection Service, we have thousands of inspectors out around the country making sure that the meat and poultry and processed egg products that people eat is safe. It doesn't have salmonella, it doesn't have E. coli, but we could do our job to our best abilities and then somebody could leave ground beef in their, you know, trunk for 3 days and then try and cook it and then make themselves sick.
If you found a pack of raw ground beef that you had forgotten in the trunk of your car for 2 days, would you cook it and eat it?
No.
Feels like you probably should toss it if it's the next day. You don't really know how hot it got in the car, for how long. So that's my gut instinct.
I also posed that question to Evelyn. She doesn't eat any meat, but I still wanted to test her knowledge of food safety.
The last question is if you find a... Well, you're not a meat eater, so no. I was going to say like raw meat that you left in the trunk of your car.
and you forget it and wonder, yeah,
throw it out.
So next time you're thinking about food, keep some of these safety tips in mind. Put your leftovers away in the refrigerator as soon as you can. Use a meat thermometer. Don't wash your raw chicken before cooking it. And whatever you do, don't cook and eat that raw meat that you forgot for days in your trunk. For more information, go online to fsis.usda.gov. This has been Agriculture USA. I'm Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
The Citrus Research Board invites the citrus industry to attend this year's California Citrus Conference on Wednesday, October 11th in Visalia. Join the CRB at 7:30 for registration and a free breakfast. Sessions kick off at 9 with a focus on ACP control and HLB early detection technologies. California Ag Secretary Karen Ross will address attendees, followed by a free barbecue lunch. Afternoon sessions include post-harvest technologies, biocontrol, and the very latest in citrus breeding and varieties. Pre-register for this free conference online at citrusresearch.org.
Set sail for Madison, Wisconsin and discover new dairy worlds October 3rd through the 7th at the 2017 World Dairy Expo. For 5 days, the global dairy industry meets at the Align Energy Center to view the finest dairy cattle and dairy trade shows in North America. Virtual farm tours, expo seminars, youth contests, and social activities make Expo an ideal location for learning and networking. Visit worlddairyexpo.com to plan your trip today.
Ahoy there!
Hi?
I see this be the spot for treasure.
Treasure?
Is that not a large X in your field?
Well, it is, but that's an alfalfa stand. And that X doesn't stand for the treasure you think. It stands for Harv Extra.
Harv, come again?
Harv Extra. It's the greatest innovation in alfalfa, giving me greater flexibility in my stand. It's technologically advanced to provide a wider cutting window, so now I can maintain a normal harvest schedule and achieve higher quality. Or I can delay harvest for up to 7 days for higher yield potential without sacrificing quality.
Aye, be that when compared to conventional alfalfa at the same stage of maturity?
You bet. And Harv Extra alfalfa comes stacked with Roundup Ready technology.
For unsurpassed weed control, I wager.
Sure is.
This has been great, matey. But can you point me to the nearest sea?
Oh, sure. Hang a right at the Taylor Farm and head west for 1,500 miles. Can't miss it.
We didn't invent alfalfa. We just reinvented it. See the difference of Harv Extra alfalfa at harvextra.com.
It's time to rethink what you know about clean American propane and what it can do for your operation. Want efficient, reliable power independent of the grid? Propane can do that. Power for EPA-compliant engines without all the extra fluids and filters. Propane can do that. Eliminate fuel theft. Lower hourly fuel costs. Reduce downtime. Propane can do all of that. Discover all the things propane can do on your farm at propanecandothat.com.
AgNet West Radio Network.
The House Budget Committee has voted 22-14 along party lines.
Your trusted agriculture news provider for the state of California. AgNet West's team of Sabrina Hill.
As crews continue to fight the Detweiler fire in Mariposa County.
Brian German.
Weedy rice has been a growing concern for California farmers.
And myself, Taylor Hillman. Join us every day to stay up to date with the latest agriculture news from AgNet West Radio Network and online at agnetwest.com.
Healthy soil can help protect your farm from drought, improve production, and protect soil and water resources. And that can lead to a healthier bottom line for your business. Contact your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. And now more of the agriculture stories you'll want to know today. Blue Diamond Growers, the world's largest nonprofit almond processing and marketing cooperative, representing over half of California's almond growers, welcomes and strongly supports passage of the Cultivating Revitalization by Expanding American Agricultural Trade and Exports Act, or CREATE. The introduction of the CREATE Act in the Senate follows the House version, H.R. 2321, which was introduced in May. Blue Diamond's Director for Communications and Public Affairs, Alicia Rockwell, says, "With more than 70% of California's almond crop going to export, trade remains vital to the long-term health and viability of our almond growers, as well as thousands of supporting jobs that economic activity sustains. The bill would increase statutory funding for two trade programs, both of which have faced stagnant funding and eroding real dollar impact due to inflation, sequestration, administrative costs, and increased global competition." A November 2016 economic study by Informa Economics IEG found that increasing public funding for these programs, coupled with increasing private contributions from farmers and others, would not only increase farm income, but also create up to 85,000 new and part-time jobs. Farmers, business owners, and others on Medicare might find a bigger bill in the mail than they expected. Todd Gleason has more on how big income years produce big Medicare premiums 2 years later.
Well, we're here in East Peoria at one of the University of Illinois' farm tax schools, an event that they have fairly often. This one is a seminar that's in particular related to the business and complexity of farm taxes. Bob Ray is here. He's with FBFM and manages to put some taxes together for farmers over the years. I was listening this morning and found something of great interest that I think the audience, both farmers and business owners, will find of interest, because I believe it probably is applicable to both, especially when they get to retirement age. That if they retire, and in the case of a farmer, they sell the business, they sell probably not the property, but they sell farm machinery, that a couple of years later, that income will come back to them, even if they find a way through the tax system not to have an impact or as much of an impact that year of the sale. It will come back to them if they are in the government health insurance programs for the retired folks.
That's right, Todd. It's sort of a hidden or almost a phantom additional cost that exists on liquidating a business. And you're right, it's a farm and a non-farm issue both. For people who are drawing Medicare and paying Medicare premiums, the IRS has a rule that says if you have a large income in 1 year, we wait 2 years and then look back and determine if you need to pay a higher Medicare premium because you had high income in that 2 years prior.
So for business owners, go through the calculations for me of some kind of sample.
Sure. And it's a scale. So normally a business owner or any person that's paying Medicare premiums today would pay around $150 a month for a Medicare Part B and a typical Medicare Part D drug prescription plan. And that turns into $1,800 a year, or for a couple, about $3,600 a year. The rule then says 2 years hence, we look back, and if you had a high income in that second prior year, they will increase the amount of your Medicare premiums on a scale based on how much income, additional income you have in that second prior year.
So how do you get around it, or is there a way to get around it?
We don't think there's a very good way around that. We've tried, you know, writing letters and saying these were unusual or one-time events, but typically the rule is the rule. They look back 2 years, if you had a high income, they will increase your premiums. And if it can increase to the highest level, so that a married couple taking Medicare Part D and Part B premiums could be paying as much as $12,000 a year instead of the more normal $3,600 a year. And we don't find that out until 2 years later, so it's something important to keep in mind in our planning for large incomes at the time of retirement.
So there are some ways, and you asked the audience here at the Farm Tax School in East Peoria to work maybe with the Social Security folks to make sure that that doesn't show up, but not very many people are successful at this apparently.
Correct. I mean, and today was the first time I heard of anyone who'd had success in sort of appealing that new calculation. When you get the notice that would come to folks in November, December of the year before those higher rates take effect, it lays out some steps you can do through an appeal. But my experience and most of our attendees' experience was those were not very successful. There was a little glimmer of hope where we had three people who had submitted those types of appeals and had had one in very unique circumstances, but generally it's difficult to find a way to beat that higher Medicare premium that gets asserted 2 years from the time of the higher income.
And I use this as an example of a farm auction, or maybe they sold the business, but it would be on any large income year?
Any income that's on your individual tax return would trigger this higher premium. A machinery sale, an inventory sale of equipment, a farmland sale, taking a lump sum out of a retirement plan for a non-farm person, receiving deferred compensation for people who have those options. Anything that boosts your 1040 page one answer has the risk of increasing your Medicare premiums 2 years later.
So the important part really is that they know that 2 years later that they may have a large Medicare premium that there is due, and they need to plan for it.
Correct. We always get caught up in, well, what's the tax impact of my 2017 transaction? And we can fairly determine what that might be. Our point today was, remember, there's also an impact on your 2019 Medicare premium. Just acknowledge, be aware of that, be ready for that, and know that there's a slim chance of defeating that. But the more important part is, there's another tax coming 2 years from now.
I'm Todd Gleason.
For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City News Day by Agnet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.